Sairam, dear listeners, good morning and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Coming to you live from our studios is me, Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and the host for this show, the Radio Sai Answering Booth. Well, truly speaking, this is our show, for I can't do it without you listeners. Because the entire program depends on and revolves around the questions that you send me, isn't it? And of course, the one who truly runs the show like every other show on Radio Sai is Swami himself. The questions are his and the answers are his too. So join me, dear listeners, in offering humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet before we embark into yet another episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. We have an interesting question today, and I'm guessing that the answer will take most of the time on today's show. But if we have some time to spare, I would be delighted to share some general thoughts with you. But we'll try and give as much prominence to the answer as possible. But before we head to the question, here comes the quote of the week. Profound words of a very wise man that I wish to share with you today. These are words of Anthony de Mello, brilliant author and speaker in whose words I have personally found much inspiration. And here comes the quote. Truth is purchased at the price of loneliness. If you wish to follow truth, you must learn to walk alone. End of quote. Well, what he says cannot be put in simpler words, I guess. It is said that if you wish to be a fisherman, you cannot have fear of being in the sea. If you wish to be a pilot, you have to overcome your fear of heights. Because you cannot choose fishing and not choose the sea. You can't choose flying and not choose the sky. Similarly, truth and loneliness are sometimes intricately connected. And as Anthony de Mello says, loneliness is a price we must be prepared to pay. There's no point in saying, oh, I chose the path of truth and now I am lonely. It's like saying, I chose fishing and now I'm at sea. And that is why the path of truth and righteousness is not for the faint-hearted and the insecure. I'm tempted to quote what Tagore writes as part of his famous song, Ekla Chalo Re. He says, if they turn away and desert you when crossing the wilderness, O thou unlucky one, trample the thorns under thy feet. Trample the thorns under thy tread and along the blood-lined track, travel alone. Well, but the quote for today is that of Anthony de Mello, and permit me, dear listeners, to read it just one more time before moving on. Truth is purchased at the price of loneliness. If you wish to follow truth, you must learn to walk alone. Now to the question for this week. As I said, I have one question from an interesting listener. She's, I don't know where she's from. Her name is Amrita Panda. And I have Sister Sumana who's recorded the question for us. So we'll listen to the question in the voice of our volunteer Sister Sumana, and then we'll try to answer the question for this person.
Sairam brother, I'm a 26-year-old girl, a former Balvikas student. I am currently pursuing one of the most prestigious courses in India, that is Chartered Accountancy. I have only 8 papers to go. I have always been an excellent student and have this firm conviction that studying is one of the best things I can ever do. During my school days, I never had to plan for anything, be it my studies, exercise, going to Balvikas class, going to music class, etc. All these activities happen very naturally without using any pen or paper or working on a formal plan. It has been 3 years now. I feel trapped in a self-created cage. This cage is one of over-planning. I have not only formulated my daily study plan, but have also taken note of many minute things of my life, like personal care products that I need to use, my food chart, my exercise do's and don'ts, how many times I should wash my face, how many glasses of water I need to consume, etc., etc. Things became complicated when I watched a saint on TV who was saying, write your life goals as writing your life script. Write about the nature of your job you are aspiring for, salary you expect to have, other personal goals which shall aid to visualize your aim of life and will fill your life with achievements. I followed that as well. My dilemma is, whenever I see all these goals in a single goal chart, it is more like luggage and burden. Psychologically, my brain feels stressed and looks for opportunity to skip all these activities which I have planned, including studies. As a result, my study target remain unfulfilled. Exams turn into havoc and add to my restlessness. As I have not been able to clear my papers since last 3 years. My inner conscience has come to my help as well. It says, focus only on your study plan for the time being, which is the most important priority. Swami within also keeps saying, do not plan too much, because I am there to plan for you. But my monkey mind fails to listen to him. I sometimes feel, if Swami ever appears to me physically, he will look at me with big eyes and say, "Eh, itna paper waste karta hai?" As I plan and replan my activities, ending up wasting a lot of paper. Maybe I already know my answer, but if I hear from a Sai brother who has been in physical proximity of Bhagwan, it would be like Swami directly talking to me. Sai Ram.
Thank you, Sister Amrita, for that question at the very outset. Let me tell you that nothing can be more authentic than the voice of your conscience. And years of proximity is only years with Swami, but the conscience is always the inner voice, and it is Swami himself, right? So definitely my answer is not going to be more authentic than the voice that you hear from within. But coming to the answer, the first point I would like to make is, we all are very different and we derive satisfaction and joy from doing different kind of things. Well, some of us like to be very meticulous, but some of us like to be spontaneous. And that's what makes the world interesting, isn't it? That we are all very different and unique kind of people. So to an extent, it's not completely wrong the way you are if you're different from your colleagues and your other members in your family. So to an extent, accept what you are. Don't worry too much. And it is not wrong to plan or even have targets, nor is it wrong to have disciplines in your everyday life. Well, the problem for most of us is we start lacking balance. We start overdoing some things, as you clearly have pointed out in your own question. So how do we ensure that we maintain a balance in whatever we do, especially when we talk about setting targets and goals for ourselves and about our everyday disciplines that we set for ourselves? But before that, let's discuss a little about why we plan, and is it in any way good or is it bad in any sense? Why do we plan? Why do we set short-term and long-term goals and targets? And we do that always. You know, even as a child, we were asked, what would you become when you grow up? And we would often say, you know, say something like, I'd like to become a doctor, I'd like to become a lawyer. See, these are not life goals. These are short-term goals or short-term targets which we keep for ourselves. Because even if I had said that I want to become a doctor, probably a person ends up being a doctor or graduates becoming a doctor at the age of 25. So you literally have 2/3 of your life, or, you know, 3/4 of your life after that to live. Then how can that be your life goal if you're achieving it probably in 1/4 of your life? So all these are targets that we keep for ourselves in certain, points in our life. Sometimes when we say, where do I see myself 10 years from now? Where do I see myself 5 years from now? So these are short-term targets which we keep for ourselves. And it is good in that sense that it gives a certain direction to our life, some sort of structure. And that plan that we keep for ourselves will help us define what we are supposed to be doing right now in the present. So in that sense, it is good, especially many of the professions that we choose, something like a doctor, as I mentioned, or something like even an athlete. If you want to become an athlete or gymnast, or if you have dreams of winning the Olympics for the country one day. You need to start really early, right? So that defines your childhood, that defines the choices that you make as you go through school, the choices that you make when you go into university and all of those things. So it is not wrong to have such short-term life goals because they help to discipline our life in a certain manner. So in that sense, it is good, but if the goal that we set for ourselves should not remain as mere dreams or castles in the air, then it also starts with disciplining my present. If I'm not going to work towards it right now, then these targets will remain dreams and will remain unfulfilled, right? So that is why our everyday discipline or what we do in everyday life, be it our study plans or be it even the way we give time for recreation and for other pleasurable activities in our life, all of this matters because this is what will eventually enable us to reach the dream or target that we have set for ourselves. So this is how these two are connected, our everyday discipline or everyday scheduling and the target that we keep for ourselves, be it 10 years down the line or 20, 25 years down the line. So that is how these two are intricately connected. But the beauty of this everyday scheduling, as you were mentioning that you like to schedule your everyday, how many times you drink water and all of that. Well, any kind of scheduling that you do every day, any kind of disciplining in your everyday life that you do, Swami says, if you are able to follow it, the amount of self-confidence that comes out of it is enormous, right? Because it infuses in you that the idea that I can control my life. You know, I can have a control over my mind and my senses. And Swami would say that gives you enormous self-confidence. Swami would tell us that a simple act like waking up at a designated time every day in the morning can give you enormous amount of self-confidence and self-control. So in that sense, it's very important to have disciplines in our life. But the contrary of that is when you set schedules for yourself and if you repeatedly don't keep up to it, just like how following it gives you self-confidence, we failing to keep up to it on a regular basis will eventually sap our confidence. So that is something that we will have to keep in mind, right? Now, let's start with, I'd like to divide the answer into two halves. Probably one, I'll talk about the everyday activities that we do and everyday disciplines that we maintain and how to ensure that there is a certain balance and we don't overdo it. And how do we rightly distribute our time to important activities? And how do we maintain that balance? And the second half would be about the goal. How do we ensure that the goal that we set does not become a burden, like how you've mentioned, right? So let's start with the everyday activities. You know, there are the different activities that we do throughout our everyday in our life, through many phases in our life, as we were children, as we are youngsters, and then when we probably, you know, some of us enter the stage of a householder or we become an elderly senior citizen. So all of these many activities that we do can be put under four categories. And these categories are based on what is the motive behind these different activities that we perform. So the first thing that we have to remember is, we don't do any activity whatsoever without a certain purpose behind it. It might not be a very profound purpose, but it can at least have a very superficial, very spontaneous, or very limited purpose. But nothing that we do is without purpose. So on the basis of the purpose of the activities that we perform, the activities that we fill our lives with can be put under four categories. And these are what are referred to in our scriptures as the purusharthas, or the goals of human life. And they are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So let's start backwards. Let's first talk about moksha, which is actually the subtlest form of these four goals of life. And we all know what moksha is. Eventually you have to get liberated. You have to ensure that the cycle of birth and death comes to an end. Well, those are all the philosophical points. But if you break it down to what exactly moksha is and what are those activities that we do deliberately or sometimes inadvertently which come under this category of those actions whose purpose is moksha. The Indian scriptures, the Vedanta always maintains that the only way you can get liberated is when you have a superior sense of knowledge. That knowledge which enables you to see the permanent as separate from the impermanent, or your ability to look beyond the delusion that life is. Right? Okay, that sounds a bit complicated, but simply speaking, any kind of knowledge which enables you to see your life more clearly, rather than being in an autopilot mode where you let life drag you along, any knowledge or any state of mind which enables you to look at your life and say, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, and this is what I need to stop doing, and this is what I need to start doing. So any activity which enables you to do that or get into that frame of mind. So anything from everyday meditation, or probably even a calm contemplative evening or morning walk, reading spiritual literature, or listening to discourses, or being in the good company of the wise. And all of these come under this category of, all of these processes enable your mind to look at your life more clearly and to step back and say that this is what I'm doing wrong and this is what I'm doing right. Right? So in a sense, these are actually general attitudes. It's not necessarily a particular action that you need to do, but these all mold your attitude and your perception of your everyday life. So this is actually a very, very important category of actions. Sadly, many youngsters feel that activities which are related to moksha have to wait till you have, used up all your youthful energies. But it is not so. I will come back to that, because the activities that we do under this category will in fact help us define better the other three categories that we're going to talk about. But we'll come to that in the end. Well, next category, as I said, we're going backwards, is karma or pleasure. So all those activities that we do for pleasure, for recreation, we go out with friends, we watch TV at home, or we go out for a movie, or maybe something as simple as just lazing around at home. Right? All of these activities come under the category of karma, or actions that we do for our own pleasure. Right? And we have many activities like this based on our nature itself, depending on what, if you're a lazy person, as I said, lazing around at home would probably be the activity that you prefer doing, right? Because it gives you pleasure. And some of us maybe some of us are very perverted, and that could even result in some people having very unethical, pleasurable activities. But all of those activities that we do for the sake of drawing some pleasure out of them comes under this category of karma. It could be something very simple and innocuous to something dangerous and even unethical, right? The next comes artha. Generally we say artha is wealth, right? But when we talk about artha as a purushartha, right, as a goal of life, it means that anything that we do for the sake of security, that's how it is usually defined. We seek wealth because we want security in our future. We seek relatives and friends because we want security. And we seek achievements because achievements give us a certain prominence and name in society, and that can give us a certain security. So artha literally means anything that we gather around us because we are feeling insecure and we feel that it will give us a certain amount of confidence, right? So anything, all your achievements actually come under what we call artha. If I tell myself I need to get this degree, if I tell myself I need to, buy this house, or if I tell myself I need to get this promotion by the end of this year, all of that comes under artha. So the activities that you do to earn money and the activities that you do to achieve a certain goal or target can actually be brought under this category of artha. And finally, the most important, which is dharma, which is based on our roles and responsibilities depending on the current situation in our life. Things that I must do whether I like it or not. That's the very important word there, whether we like it or not. Whether it gives us any monetary benefit or not. And needless to say, this is the most important and critical set of activities. Now, these three, dharma, artha and karma, as activities are in the order of their importance, which means dharma is the most important and the activities inspired by our pleasure or karma are the least important. So now if we look at this, the categorization which is given in our scriptures, the mistake that you are doing, Sister Amrita, especially based on the question that you've sent us, I think you are giving equal importance to all activities that fall under these various categories. But what we really need to do is, when we start scheduling our everyday activities, we have to make it in such a way that we give priority in the order that activities that fall under dharma or our duties get prominence or the first priority. And then artha, the goals that we set for ourselves, the achievements that we set for ourselves, that gets second priority. And then comes kama or the pleasurable activities, right? And the interesting thing to note, the important thing also to note, is that the activities that come under this category of dharma or duty will constantly keep varying with our circumstances. God forbid, let's say someone at your home falls sick. Then though you are a student and the dharma of a student is primarily to study, in these circumstances of having a sick person in the family, to take care of that family member could become your primary dharma. Or let's say in the course of your education you get married and you eventually have a child. So some urgent duties as a mother will have to take precedence over what you do for artha, that is earning money or earning a degree. So, you know, this category of dharma is a very flexible category and will vary depending on what Swami would call as desha kala paristhiti, which is where you are, what is the period of time you're going through, and the circumstances around you. So, the prioritization is very, very important whenever you are scheduling activities every day. But you have to ensure that, you have to remember that this category of dharma, which is the most important category of activities, is actually a category which is not always defined, very, very clearly. Most of the time, yes, you know what your dharma is. When you're a student, your dharma is a certain thing. As a doctor, your dharma is a certain set of activities. But with circumstances, you know, it starts varying. So you have to keep that in mind, and keeping that in mind, you will make your schedule flexible, right? And you will prioritize dharma over artha and artha over kama. Before I go to the goals part, as I said, the second half will be about, you know, when we set goals, how are we supposed to approach them, right? Before we get there, let me talk a little about this moksha. As I said, this is a very important category. And when I talk of moksha, all the activities which come under, Swami would use a word, the Sanskrit word called swadhyaya, which means self-study. In other words, every now and then, as much as possible, we need to step back from our relentless activity in daily life and see, what am I doing? Am I doing the right things? And look at ourselves, especially observe our emotions. Why do we get angry? Why do I fear certain things? Why do I desire for certain things? If there is a feeling of jealousy, keenly look at ourselves and say, why am I getting jealous? Like, these are all very, very important things which come under activities that we do under moksha, right? And apart from that, listening to the wise people, listening to discourses of Swami, reading spiritual literature, all of this, what it does is it spiritually tunes our mind. And when that happens, this categorization of dharma, artha and kama starts becoming more clear. And some activities which were earlier in the section of kama would land up in dharma. Some activities which we thought were actually our duties will slowly be relegated to the other categories of artha and kama. And you will start seeing it more clearly what belongs to where. And accordingly, your prioritization will also improve. Let me try to explain that with a couple of examples. Most of us see eating as a pleasurable activity, right? And there's no hiding that. We all enjoy eating. We all enjoy certain types of food. So we see eating as a pleasurable activity. And when we do that, we tend to indulge in it, right? But when we become more spiritual in our perspective, we will realize that eating is actually a duty that we perform to our body, right? So though you will give importance to it, because you have to give importance to whatever falls under the category of duty or dharma, when you do it as a duty, you will end up regulating it, right? You will not overindulge in it, or you will not undereat also. The moment you see eating as a duty, you will say that, I mean, I'm not going to see whether I'm putting on more weight or am I looking good. That becomes secondary, because that again will start falling under the category of artha or kama. You say that this is what the body needs. Am I feeding the body enough, or am I feeding the body too much? So the moment you see eating food as a duty, a dharma to the body, you will start regulating it. Similarly, something like sleep. Most of us enjoy sleep. You know, that's probably the most liked pastime for most of us. The moment we start getting tuned more spiritually, again we will start seeing sleep as a duty that we perform to our body. And the moment we start seeing sleep as a duty, we will start regulating it. We will not overdo it, or we will not underdo it, because some of us are capable of doing that. We sacrifice our sleep, which is our duty to the body, so that we can pursue our artha or our achievements or, you know, more money. So similarly, you know, when you are at work, let's say that you will see your activities more as duty. When I'm in the office, yes, it is actually an activity which falls under artha. I'm being paid for it and I'm doing work. But when I become spiritual in my approach, I will see every activity that is entrusted to me as my dharma, and I will participate in it with the idea that this is my duty and I need to do it. I will not worry whether I'm being paid enough for it or somebody else is taking the credit for it. That will not bother me. This is my dharma and I'll have to do it. So automatically an activity which was under the section of artha becomes an activity which comes under dharma. That's why Swami would say, when you become more spiritual, you will actually become more diligent. You cannot be careless and say, because I'm spiritual, I'm lost in my spiritual thoughts, I'm not being diligent. That will not happen, right? So that is why these activities which we do under this category of moksha is very, very important, especially for youngsters. Because youngsters, we all tend to say that, you know, let me live out my young life and adult life, young adult life. And then when the energy start seeping out of the body, let's turn to these activities of reading spiritual literature. It's very wrong, because throughout our life, what is important is, as Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, is to perform dharmic actions. And as I just explained, the ability to see what is our activity which falls under dharma and to be able to stick to that comes from the spiritual learning and the spiritual perspective which comes when we do more of these activities which fall under moksha. That's why as youngsters, it is very, very important to set aside some time which falls under the activity of moksha. And when we are scheduling our life, to summarize whatever I've said so far, do it in such a way that you give importance to those activities which come under dharma. As you explained, Sister Amrita, in your question itself, yes, right now what is important in your life is to give more importance to the scheduling that you do with relation to your studies, rather than the scheduling that you do with other things. Or maybe something like, you know, every week I need to go out with my friends for dinner, or every day I need to, you know, probably use this beauty product or something. Those things are less important, and because probably you've got into this habit of writing down too many things, maybe you can cut down certain things which fall under these other categories which you don't have to worry about at this stage in your life. Give importance to the scheduling of your study activities and stick to that for now, right? And when you do a scheduling of your life, remember that some of these things which come under karma can always be let go. Let us say I tell myself that every month you know, I need to go out and hang out with my friends. That comes under a pleasurable activity. We sometimes tend to think that that's our duty, that is a duty I owe to my friends. No, that actually always comes under the category of karma. And so when there is an emergency, let's say when there is an exam the next day, or if there's an emergency in the family by which the role that you play in your family needs to be attended to, then these activities which come under pleasure have to be let go very spontaneously. And that is where maturity comes, right? That is where we prioritize our life and we know what needs importance at what time and in what situation. Well, that is regarding our daily scheduling. And now let's come to the part of setting goals for ourselves. As I explained, it is very important because it gives some kind of direction in our life. And most of us have desires and aspirations. It is very natural, right? That's why in the spiritual path, they say that you are actually swimming against the tide, where you're trying to be desireless, where you're trying to be very, very spontaneous. Because most of us always have plans. Most of us always have desires and aspirations and goals. So it's nothing wrong to have them, and it's nothing wrong to have legitimate aspirations. As I said, these fall under the category of artha, and Swami would always explain that it is not wrong to have desires of artha or pursue artha as long as it is within the bounds of dharma, right? It is not wrong to have desires in the form of kama as long as they are within the bounds of dharma. So it is not wrong to have these plans, and especially it is good because in a way they define our present, they help us discipline our today. So it is not wrong. But, as I said, following plans will give us enormous confidence, and not following them will end up sapping our confidence. So if we are having goals in our life, ensure that those goals reflect as daily plans and we work towards them. So the problem with setting up goals is there are two problems. One is not working towards them. Just like as you said, you've written down your entire life plan, and I don't know how many years you've included in that. So when you look at it, if you're working towards it, if you're taking every step that you take in a daily basis towards it, you will not feel that as a burden. You will feel that, you know, there will be a sense of enthusiasm and adventurism when you look at the goal that you've written for yourself. You will feel that, yes, I'm getting there. But if you're not doing that, that will become a burden, right? So one problem with setting goals like this is, if you do not follow them, then it's going to be a big sap on your self-confidence. The second problem when we set goals for ourselves is we end up being extremely attached to the goals that we keep for ourselves, right? We say that I have to achieve this, and because when we set a goal for ourselves, this is how the mind works. See, when I say that 5 years down the line, this should be my paycheck, right? So which means very, very subconsciously I'm telling myself that part of my happiness depends on what happens 5 years down the line. I'm literally investing my happiness in a future event. So that is the problem. I wouldn't call that a problem, but that happens spontaneously. And the more you get attached to the goals that you set for yourself, the more you are very, very strongly investing a future of your happiness in an event which is actually dependent on so many factors. A simple thing like when we were children, we would be constantly asked, what would you like to be when you grow up? And we would have different answers for that. Someone would say, I would like to become the president of the country. Somebody would say, I would like to become a doctor. But as we go through life, there are many changes that happen. We become more mature. We clearly see what we like more than what we don't like. So our choices change. And as we grow older, we need to accommodate for the dreams of others who come into our lives. So in that sense, the goal that we set for ourselves, especially say something 20 years down the line, is subject to so much change on the factors around us. And when we invest the future of our happiness in something like that and we get attached to it, it's that much how we end up endangering our happiness. So one thing which we have to learn is have dreams for ourselves, have targets, but do not get too attached to them. Do not say that, oh, come what may, I need to achieve this, and if I don't achieve this, my life is a waste. Never do that. Constantly keep telling yourself that this is what I wish to be, but if it doesn't happen, I'll do something else worthwhile with my life. Because, you know, remember one thing that, you know, we are not the constant personality. Our personality itself is constantly changing, right? So one thing is, if you have a goal, work towards it. Try whatever it takes to work towards it. If 20 years dreams are becoming a burden, take smaller bites. That's the best thing, right? Don't bite more than you can chew. Keep targets which are probably 1 year, 2 years down the line, and ensure that those targets express themselves as express themselves as everyday activities that we do. And the second thing is, try and detach yourself from the goals and dreams that you have. And this detachment that is very, very important from our goals should be very, very easy for people like you and me because of the presence of Swami in our lives. Because the moment you bring in Swami into the picture, you say that, Swami, this is my dream. This is what I would like to achieve. But I know that you might have a different plan for me. And as you yourself mentioned it in your question, yes, that is exactly the right attitude to have. And even when Swami was physically here, that's precisely what Swami would do. You know, when we would go up to Swami, especially after our bachelor's or after our master's, we would, many of our students would go up to Swami and ask, Swami, what should I do now? What subject should I take? I finished my BSc, what would you like me to do? I finished my MBA, what would you like me to do? And invariably, Swami would ask two questions. Swami would ask, what is it that you want to do, right? So which means Swami is saying that, show me your plans. What is your plan? And the second thing Swami would ask is, what do your parents want you to do? So Swami would give importance to both of these things, which means that if you have a plan, offer it to me, show it to me. Don't have a plan and hide it and say that, Swami, I would like to do whatever you'd like to do. Swami would say, if you have a plan, you know, offer it to Swami, say that, Swami, this is what I would like to be, but it is subject to what you would want me to be. What you want is more important to me. And there are, you know, Swami's many, many examples of Swami students who thought they will never marry, and Swami would have performed their marriage as a surprise in the interview room. So many students who thought that they will remain in Parthi all their life, and on a very fine day, Swami would just come and say that, no, you go back home, your parents want you back. There are some boys who never wanted to come to Puttaparthi and who are here for decades together. So the thing is, Swami will constantly keep changing our plan. Why? This is about life plans. The simplest things we could not plan when we were around Swami. We could never plan our vacations because we would never have any clue when Swami would leave for Vrindavan, when Swami would leave for Kodai from Vrindavan, when Swami will come back from Vrindavan to Puttaparthi. And our plans would be constantly in a flux. And that is why Swami would repeatedly say, love my uncertainty, right? And we would think that this uncertainty is only with reference to Swami's physical movement. That is not so. And that uncertainty, when we bring Swami into our life, that uncertainty is there in every aspect of our life. And Swami says, love my uncertainty. It is not accept my uncertainty. It is not tolerate my uncertainty. It is love my uncertainty. And this is actually a very difficult thing to do, because we all are into this habit of planning and wanting our life to go in a certain way. And we tell ourselves, this is how it should happen. So we get attached to our plans. So one of the things that we need to do in our journey with Swami is to accept uncertainty as Swami's leela, as Swami's play. Say that, Swami, this is my plan, but of course, it's all open and subject to what you wish to do in my life. And whatever I've said so far, if you look at it, it comes under what Swami speaks of as the 3 Ds or the 5 Ds or whichever way you would like to call it. And Swami would say, discipline is very, very important in everyday life. Because even when Swami was wanting us to love his uncertainty, we don't know when we will be where, we don't know what we're going to do. But yet, Swami would say that you need to lead very, very disciplined lives. If you look at some of the people in the ashram, I've seen some of them following a schedule for something like 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. Every morning they will be there for the Suprabhatam. Every morning they will be there for the Nagar Sankirtan. That's like part of their schedule for 20 years, 25 years. And Swami would appreciate it, but Swami would also ensure that time and again you don't get attached to any of your disciplines or your goals that you set your life. Because what is priority is Swami. The second priority is the dharma or the roles that you need to play at different stages in your life. And the final priority, the priority which comes after that is what you dream of, your achievements and what you want to be. And the last priority is what you like, what you derive pleasure from, right? So Swami would ensure that you lead a disciplined life, but at no point in life you get attached to your disciplines. So that is what it is, and this can be achieved, as Swami says, when you follow the 3 Ds of discipline, that is everyday discipline is important, and detachment from the goals that you set for yourself. And this discipline and detachment can be brought together, and a balance can be maintained if you have the 3rd D of devotion. So you need to have discipline, which is defined by the duty or the dharma that you have, and you need to have detachment, which can come very, very easily when you bring in this concept of discipline. So that is the answer that I thought of giving you, Sister Amrita Panda. That's a beautiful question. As you mentioned in your question, I am sure that you knew the answer because you felt that this is what Swami was telling you from within. So no answer can be more appropriate than the answer which comes from within. But thank you for asking the question, because it gave us the opportunity to dwell on something which is so very important for youngsters and people in the middle age, of how do we discipline our life, without being too attached to the discipline? How do we set goals for our lives without being too attached to the goals that we set? I don't have enough time, otherwise I would love to share some stories of how Swami would break this habit that gets into us in the name of discipline. Probably on some other day I'll share some stories in this regard, how Swami would encourage discipline, at the same time would time and again try to break this attachment that we develop to our disciplines and our duties. So thank you, Sister Amrita, for that question. If you have anything more to ask, I'd be glad to address that too. As always, you can write to me at prem@radiosai.org. So that, dear listeners, was the question and the answer that I had to give for that question. Well, as I had imagined, the answer did take most of the time. I thought I'll share some other thoughts otherwise. But I think I'll leave that to Raghu, because Raghu is going to be coming next. And apart from playing his program, probably he will share some nice stories and thoughts with all of you. So I'd like to offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. And I thank all of you for joining me on this week's Answering Booth. Do join me again next week at 11 a.m. with another question and, of course, another quote and a answer which probably is useful to all of you. Today is the 4th of May, and a couple of days from now we are going to be celebrating the Ishwarama Day. We are celebrating a soul which was so beautiful, who gave us Swami and changed our lives forever, isn't it? So we are going to celebrate her life a couple of days from now. I think the Prashanti Bhajan group is planning a beautiful musical tribute to her. So do join us live on that day. But as I leave you, I'm going to leave you with a song which is a classic on Mother Ishwarama. It's a song which I think we've all grown up listening to. A song which thanks Mother Ishwarama for giving us our beautiful dear Lord Shri Satyasai. I thank you all for your patient listening. Do join me again next week at 11 a.m. for the Radio Sai Answering Booth.
भक्ति भक्त भगवंत गुरु चतुष नाम बपुए तिनके पद वंदन किए मेटत विघ्न वचनों से मिला खुशियों।